Scott McKenzie, John Phillips, and I were in a band called The Journeymen. And this song is about the three of us, although I changed all of our names in this song. And it's about the dreams that we had. And I guess in a way we all got what we wanted, and it turned out that it wasn't enough for any of us. Maybe we should have dreamed bigger. During the 1990s, I wrote a number of songs for a union called the Oil, Coke, Chemical, and Atomic Workers Union. And this one is called One Big Union, and it actually is about some things that really happened. First about an actual oil worker who was sort of kidnapped and thrown on a train. And Karen Silkwood was a member of this union. So Much Dylan is something that I wrote in 2007, was still fiddling with at the time of these recording sessions late in the year. And the last couple of years have seen Dylan tributes, commercials, movies, Victoria's Secret commercials, an autobiography, which was on the bestseller list, the number one album. When I think about Bob Dylan, it all seems so strange to me. For example, The Times They Are A-Changin' has been used as a commercial for four different products: the post office, the Bank of Montreal, an accounting firm, and Kaiser Permanente. I don't think any of us in the 60s thought that that's what would become of a song that we regarded as a call to revolution. Dancing in My Dreams is another song that was written for OCAW, the union, and this one in particular was written for a play about Karen Silkwood. It tries to deal with sort of the ultimate question, is how she could leave her three children in the middle of the night and move from Texas to Oklahoma. The feminist movement has created a lot of changes in American life, but when you come down to it, most men still seem to see that their careers take precedence. It's women that do end up doing the cooking, and mostly they take the kids to the doctor. So this song is, on a way, partly a protest against some of my own behaviors. And the playing was pretty much influenced by a bass player in New York named Jerry Jameau, and I try to get across in the rhythm guitar part some of what Cornell Dupree used to do. I met Karen Dalton in the summer of 1960 in Denver, Colorado, and my friend Arthur Benjamin and I had come out. He lived in Philly and I lived in New York City. And we ended up going back east with Karen and her sister, who Art was enamored of. And the problem was that Karen's sister was 17 years old and had been married for 10 days. So it turned out that the state police were kind of chasing us across the state line. And this actual song was written at a party where Karen and I were in the middle of breaking up our relationship. It's the only song that I ever wrote at a party in the middle of breaking up a relationship. Lucy Ann Ragg is a song that's just a lot of fun to sing and play, and I can't really tell you that it's about anything in particular. When I was 18 years old, I found out that on Tuesday night at Tiny Leadbitter's house, a man named Gary Davis would play the guitar and sing. And Tiny was Leadbelly's niece, and I went over to that house quite a few times. I ended up learning more about music and life than I could ever explain in a single song. Captain John Sutter had a thriving grist mill and agricultural enterprise in California until gold was discovered on his land in 1848. The resulting California gold rush changed the lives of a lot of people and resulted in the destruction of Sutter's thriving business. I guess you could say, in a way, this sort of anticipated the first dot-com boom and bust in Silicon Valley more than 100 years later. I wanted to live in Colorado from the time I was about 17 years old. I wrote Never Coming Back in 1964, and I recorded it on a Capitol album when the label decided for about 10 minutes that I was going to be their Bob Dylan. Unfortunately, no one else, including me, agreed. Nothing But Silence is one of two songs I've written that has kind of a Frank Sinatra, Autumn of My Years feeling to it. I have no idea where it came from. When I was 12 years old, I went with my parents to Denver, Colorado. And I met an old man by the state capitol building. I don't know whether he was a retired miner or he'd been a railroad man, but he was kind of that sort of roustabout. For some reason, he started talking to me in some depth about his life. My parents were very suspicious of him, but I was fascinated because I hadn't met a lot of railroad workers or cowboys in Philadelphia. Years later, 1972, I moved to Denver, and Larimer Square, which is near the railroad stations, had been totally redeveloped, and a bunch of old buildings that used to have stained glass and were really very picturesque, if somewhat in a state of disrepair, had been torn down. There was one building that was still there from that time, was an old stationery store, and the owner just refused to sell the developer. He kept on there for about 10 or 15 years, and I used to go there, buy things that I didn't really need, like these old Wright Point pencils that had a red lead point at one side and a black one on the other. Eventually, he got sick, and he was taken to some sort of hospice, and he died. And now there's a building there that's named after him. The developer finally got that building, and it's called the Joe Building. So this is about people like that, the old railroad men and the cowboys and the roustabouts and all the parts of all the cities that are being torn down to make way for progress.